Question. So what was... So without authority, but with...
Yes, with some authority. He said that this point was discussed in San Diego, and Sariputta personally went through his computer and, you know, pull out all the references of how the thing happened. And in Prabhupada's purports, basically the same thing that I was saying yesterday, he also reiterated. The synopsis was taught. The whole thing was compiled, but the synopsis was taught to Shukadeva Goswami while within the womb. Later on he heard the whole thing entirely. And he spoke according to Sariputta's understanding. He spoke in choice poetry, the Bhagavatam says, which means otherwise how could you say it was his poetry unless it was his words? So he spoke in his own words these ideas in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What he spoke is also discussed at the beginning of one of these chapters. I lose track of which one. I think it's 4. No. Two. Any event, Sutta says he is going to reply, and he assimilated the understandings, and now he's going to... So now he's speaking in his own words also. So sometime later, according to Sariputta, some scribe wrote it all down.
Not definitely.
And what was passed on, and that understanding is consistent with what we're hearing, that Sutta Goswami was not expert in all features of the Vedas. In other words, he didn't have expertise in the meters and the melodies. These are different parts of the Vedas. These are very, very intricate things. But his qualification was he knew the essence, and he spoke the essence. So it's inconclusive, let's say. There's argument in favor of one thing and argument in favor of the other thing. It was compiled later. Anyway, you understand the two.
Yeah.
Further?
Because as far as tree colors, yeah. Because many of the conversations that are recorded seem that nobody else was present there. You know, how they could many, many times, right? Even Krishna speaking with the gopis, or like Uddhava and Krishna, Uddhava Maitreya was there, or Maitreya and Vidura, Kapila and Devadatta.
Right.
There's no, didn't say that.
There wasn't a stenographer there taking it down.
Right. But somehow the whole conversation was that one, because
Chaitanya Charitamrita is something like that also. But Sri Damodar was the main informant. And from the notes of Sri Damodar. Anyway, the technique of how it got into the form that we have it today, I mean, aside from Prabhupada's purports, the actual verses themselves, is not conclusive. Jiva Goswami indicates that Shukadeva Goswami spoke 18,000 verses in the form that we have it today. Yes.
David. So the we're not sure if this is because I always thought this was the one that Srila Vyasadeva had written down and it had gone down.
One version is yes.
Okay.
Jiva Goswami's version is yes. Vyasadeva wrote it.
And Sukadeva just repeated it.
That's right. Now, yeah. I mean, Gopi got into a whole thing of he wrote it doesn't necessarily mean he had, you know, he used calligraphy or he had a calligrapher write it. That's another detail. What does it mean that Vyas wrote or compiled Srimad-Bhagavatam, what actually transpired, physically transpired. That's another consideration. Yeah.
I heard Maharaj that Ganesh actually did the writing. Is that true?
What?
I mean, is that possibly true? Ganesh did the writing?
According to Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, the only actual writing that Ganesh did was with Mahabharata.
Right.
Writing. Huh?
Being scribe.
Scribe.
Oh, really?
Don't ask me any more detail. I'm just repeating what I heard from Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. He said definitely. I asked, you know, my eyebrows went up in my forehead. And he said definitely only Mahabharata. He's been writing the preface for Mahabharata and doing all of the, you know, checking all of the Sanskrit work for Mahabharata. So, you know, somewhere in that, on that authority, on the authority of having done all that work, he's making that statement. And Jagora Sundar Prabhu refers. Yeah. Ramayana?
Yes, also by.
Yeah, but not by Ganesh.
It was written by Ganesh, actually.
It was
told by
Kali. Oh. Okay. There might be different versions of that also, but at least some authorities say this. I wanted to... If someone can remind me at the end of class to pass out the homework that was handed in. Those that didn't hand in can hand in. And those that did hand in have a comment, a general comment, and that could take us right into the homework, or to the text. So one comment is that almost exclusively none of the papers that were handed in yesterday spilled over into chapter 6. Is the reason for that because I only put 5 on the board? Because in chapter 6, there's further story of Narada, where further stages of transcendental experience are described that go beyond Adau Shraddha, Tathag Sadhu Sangha, Ananta Nivritti, goes beyond that.
It was written beginning of chapter 5.
Aha, I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought I would now I'll make a few references to verses, important verses, and then I'm going to ask a question for everyone to give a nice answer to. Out of what we covered so far, some very often quoted verses are found in chapter 5, texts 17, 18, and 19. Chakva siddharmam charanam bhujam harya bhajan apakto tapatetto. This is saying these verses are dealing with Narada's explaining to Vyas the importance of the topics of Godhead being compiled and saying that this is the highest occupation. If in the course of doing that other occupational duties are neglected, if one falls down at some stage, there's no danger because that activity is permanent and transcendental. This has some reference to that verse that I started yesterday's class with. That is, that which is subtler than the most material subtle thing, that's the soul and Krishna. The topics of Krishna are the same, completely spiritual. So one who engages in the activity of hearing those topics, that activity and the progress made from that activity is eternal, even if one falls back into gross material activity. One falls down. One need not worry, I may fall down, and then because I haven't done all of my other Vedic duties, then what's going to happen to me? In other words, it's saying this is the topmost activity. Let me just go through the three verses first. And the contrary, even if I do perfectly all of the other duties that are prescribed for me in the Vedas, I've gained nothing. Nothing in terms of the transcendental attainment. Then, Tashyaiva Heto Prayate Takovino, another very often quoted nice verse. And this same idea is also spoken of later on in this and in the next chapter. But persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable in the material realm. Then, material happiness comes of its own accord. Prabhupada speaks this in many places in Bhagavad Gita purports and his lectures. So here's the reference for it, in case somebody says, oh yeah, on what authority do you say that? So here's the authority. Material happiness, of course suffering also, comes of its own accord. Just as suffering comes, we don't want it to come, but it comes. So happiness, material happiness will come also of its own accord. So what conclusion should come from that then is, one should seek that kind of happiness, which is not of this temporary place. Then, the next verse. Even if a devotee does fall, it should be understood that devotee's falling is never like the karmi, because that experience will always remain with them. Krishna personally keeps them remembering him. Very important verse. Of course, I'm not going to point out all the other verses. There's so many verses in the second chapter. That whole section that you did your homework from, 16 through 22, I believe it was. So often quoted verses. And just in general, I've been making the point. We'll make some other references even today. But I've been making the point that the first two chapters, and even for that matter the first three chapters, particularly the first two chapters, has so many verses that are simply expanded upon later on, and therefore they're very important and often quoted verses. Things that appear later on have those verses referred back to reaffirm the essence of those verses. Okay, so your question now?
Maharaj, you're saying that progress before that the progress that someone makes once he leaves devotional service is still eternal. It's not lost. I'm not sure the answer to this. That is just inconceivable. But in one sense, isn't it true that everyone, even the karmi who is not in devotional service at all and hasn't been since he was in the spiritual world, he hasn't come back to devotional service. But in one sense, hasn't he had full progress? So why did he lose that? You know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean, but you're making it unnecessarily difficult the way that you're asking it.
Okay, can I rephrase it?
No, let me rephrase it, see if I get it. Excuse me. We're all originally in the spiritual world, and therefore where's that perfect relationship with Krishna? That's your question?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
What happened to that? Go ahead.
Well, the person in the spiritual world who fell down, but so he where's so you just take the average karmi on the street. He was once in the spiritual world.
But what does that mean, though? That's another question. That we all fell from the spiritual world. What does that mean? We'll put that question on hold until the GBC comes out with their paper, because we could take the whole class discussing that topic. Let's not. Where was the origin of the jiva before the fall? That's the question. Any other question? Okay. So here's my question. When the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled, for whom was the Srimad Bhagavatam compiled? This is a discussion question. It's not a homework one. See if everyone can think a little bit. Raise their hands. Okay. Acharya had his hand up first. Let's see what he has to say.
For the general public.
Okay, well, what does that mean for the general public? Be more specific. Do you mean by the general public non-devotees?
Yes. Devotees and non-devotees inclusive.
Devotees and non-devotees inclusive. Akila Dalkabal?
I was just considering the verse before the one you just on 17, I was just looking at 16.
Speak loudly so everyone in the back can hear you clearly.
You were just thinking on 17, I just glanced before at 16, it actually brought up...
Chapter 5, text 16.
Yeah, it actually brought up it brought the question to my mind too, also what you brought up.
Okay, now state your...
It states it here, the Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Lord. So that means person is really geared specifically for persons who aren't so well situated.
I disagree with that statement. The second half of the verse seems to indicate that it's for those who aren't well situated.
That's
also.
What?
Speak loud enough so the people in the back can hear the dialogue.
You said that it's for those who are advanced?
Are not.
I'm sorry.
Are greedy.
Misheard.
Acharya completely agrees, and Mother Mahendrani has a question. Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking it's for both.
Clarify and support your statement.
It says that the people, expert personalities who retire from activities of material happiness, they deserve to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. They deserve to, the others don't deserve to, but they need it. And if that's not a good support, then you get a little bit of quote from the support.
Okay.
You've always heard it's for the. The Srimad Bhagavatam, these topics are for both the great souls who are pure devotees and for everybody else as well.
Someone who hasn't spoken yet, Arjun?
I thought Maharaj's original question is for
whom is the Srimad Bhagavatam compiled?
Compiled, and then it's often stated that it's for the less intelligent that it was compiled.
Jagor Sundar, you want to comment on that statement? You showed me a quote yesterday.
Yeah. That was for
Mahabharata. So, but the quote was, Mahabharata was specifically compiled for whom? And therefore, that is not appropriate. That compilation was already done. Srimad Bhagavatam is yet another compilation for another purpose. In the back? Yes? Kathleen?
Not everyone picks up the Bhagavatam. It's going to be able to understand it. But what I think what they're saying here is those who can understand the devotees, by the goodness or by the greed, have to show those.
Rampara is going to solve it.
No, I just jumped over to the Mahabharata verse because it says that.
Which one?
Chapter 5, text 3. And it says that Mahabharata has listed that as all those accomplishments that are part of what's not satisfying, you know, what is not actually producing the final proper benefit for people in general. The Mahabharata is full, it says, full of all kinds of Vedic sequences elaborately explained, but it doesn't specifically narrate the full pastimes or glories.
Okay, so now my question is, the full pastimes of the glories of the Lord are meant for the benefit of whom?
For everyone.
Okay.
I agree with Acharya Das.
Okay.
But everyone, even not even within the Vedic culture, but
I'll read one quote and then call on Krishna Kripa. Okay, the quote is from chapter 3, text 40. This is one often quoted verse. You'd like to look at it? It's on page 192. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God and is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Krishna Kripa Prabhu.
Although it's meant for all people, also later on it says in the Bhagavatam itself that people who are killers of the soul are killers. Animals cannot understand it. So,
cannot. But just to play devil's advocate, what about those people that therefore we should, before we distribute a Srimad Bhagavatam to somebody,
ask them.
We should ask them, excuse me, sir, are you an animal killer? Oh, you can't take this book, I'm sorry. Next. Excuse me, sir. Right? Because you won't understand it.
No, but...
part of the discussion that we've been reading is that this age is filled with so many vices. And the lamentation of Vyasadeva is he wants to do that which is all around good. Of course, this is one of the preliminary questions of the sages of Naimisharanya in chapter 1. What's the all around good for all people absolutely in all circumstances? So I want to read one other verse. And this was a verse that Parampara Prabhu pointed out to me the other day. See if I can find it. 1116. Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of this age of quarrel who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? Now this would indicate that the Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled specifically for the benefit of those who are filled with vices. Because one who is filled with vice but desiring to become free from vice would then be prescribed, go to the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this can free you from those vices. Akhila Dharpabhu.
That brings up the point that many people want to maintain their vices.
Right.
So do that disqualify them, or does the devotee actually want to actually somehow get a Bhagavatam into their hands anyway?
Okay, Chari Prabhu.
About that, and also Krishna Kripa's point, that even if someone is unqualified to understand it, that doesn't mean that they won't be purified by some proper contact with it.
Okay. Now what? This is going to be the concluding.
So if they have the
I ain't calling you. Just wait. I'll just read this, and I think it will be very clear. Page 294. This is the last verse in chapter 5. Please therefore describe the Almighty Lord's activities which you have learned by your vast knowledge of the Vedas, for that will satisfy the hankerings of great learned men and at the same time mitigate the miseries of the masses of common people who are always suffering from material pangs. So the reason for going through this, besides it's a little exciting to hear everybody offer their suggestions and involves you in the subject matter, it makes the point very clear that many things are being accomplished in this chapter that where Narada appears at the end of chapter 4 and the whole of chapter 5 where he's discussing his realization. Then he gives his various instructions to Narada. Then Vyas, the next chapter, is reinforcing the same point that it's even good for Vyas to compile these Srimad Bhagavatam because they will completely satisfy him. And Vyas's interest, because he's such an elevated, perfect soul, Vaishnava, he is interested for the welfare of all others. So it's simultaneously good for both. Hearing these topics, then, and discussing these topics is good for those who are discussing them and good for those who are hearing them being discussed. all around good for everyone. Yes.
There's another text in the chapter 7, text 6, which yeah clearly says the same thing. There. It says, like, this is for the mass of people. That's why we ask the day from compiled and committed for the riches.
That's nice.
What is it?
Chapter 7, text 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for the mass of people. This Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes that doubt enters our preachers' minds, or devotees' minds. What are we doing presenting such an elevated subject? They'll never understand, etc. But it's meant for them. The Kali Yuga masses. In fact, this is a theme. It's one of the questions asked by the sages. It comes, in other words, I'll just repeat one of the things I've been saying, that the philosophy comes in the early chapters. We don't hear stories narrating and couching the philosophy so nicely in these early chapters, but as the chapters, even in this canto, are going on, the philosophy is being presented in the story form. The storyline is carrying the philosophy. And the philosophy is, what is the cure for this age of Kali? How to radically bring about a revolution in the impious lives of people in general? Or just like the question, what is the essence of the scripture? That is to say, there's so many duties or dharmic activities that one may have to perform. Enjoined in the Vedas. What if I can't do them all? The sages are asking, we know that they can't. So the often quoted verse that I recited to you, chapter 5, text 17, says, even if you do all of them perfectly, you're still not going to get anything lasting. And if you, in the course of executing whatever you can execute, you engage yourself properly in the hearing and chanting activity, that makes everything perfect. Even if you fall from that position, it'll never be lost. So in this way, the vices of the age of Kali are to be mitigated. There's the section we're going to... What did we already? We did already. The discussion of the summation towards the end of yesterday's class. The summation of the duties, or dharma, where how it is that activities that we're engaged in now, jnana and karma, can be brought to the platform of perfection. It's by the process of devotional service. So now I'm going to jump right into it. You can, chapter 5, text 36, what I'm hoping to do is complete our way through chapter 6. In a half an hour. Okay, so starting with text 36. While performing duties according to the orders of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one constantly remembers Him, His names, and His qualities. So, one of the verses, this is part of the story. This is Narada instructing Vyas on why he's feeling despondency, and what needs to be done is to present that literature that will give topics for hearing and chanting, because what happens from hearing and chanting, remembering, will come. And when remembrance is being done, then one can engage in activities in such a way that through remembering the activities of Krishna, one's activities become devotional service. Now, this section, you look at the previous verse, text 35. Whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga. Where does this bhakti yoga come from? It comes from the hearing and chanting activity. Because from that hearing and chanting, then one will remember how one's activity should be dedicated while working. The verse that comes in Rupa Goswami's writing, Kiha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira. You know that verse. So even in this world, Rupa Goswami said, someone who apparently is engaged in even mundane activity, apparently mundane activity, that person, jivan mukta sa uchate, is to be considered liberated. So that's Jiva Goswami's way of summarizing. So now I want to refer you back, because we made a point of it as we were going through the first time, but now for review, chapter 2, text 15. Page number 2. How does one get that remembrance of Krishna? By hearing and chanting. And how does one get engaged in the hearing and chanting process? Well, one has to have an initial desire to be out of this material condition, and then one has to have the good fortune of saintly association. Because through that saintly association, the hearing and chanting activity can ensue. Automatically, the problems of karma and jnana are taken care of. So now we're still in chapter 5. We'll flip backwards a bit, a couple more verses. Look at text 34 in chapter 5. Page 285. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which caused his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. So there's a similar verse earlier in this canto, using a thorn to remove a thorn, is there. By the very same thing, or Prabhupada's example, commonly we hear, taking one milk product to cure one of disease of another milk product. By engaging in activity, just like what resembles everyone else, we're sitting in a classroom and studying something, and it, you know, someone else comes in and it looks just like everything else that karmis are doing. We're just, you know, giving it another name. But according to the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, those activities, when the topic is the personality of Godhead, that creates brings the activity to the transcendental platform, and concomitantly also knowledge follows. And that's in text 35. And what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. Karma becomes bhakti or transcendental, and what is normally just acquiring knowledge becomes also accomplished, but transcendental knowledge by the hearing and chanting. So, try to understand that the hearing and chanting activity is being glorified in a scientific way, very thoroughly. So then verse 32, still working backwards in this chapter, O Brahman of Vyasadeva, it is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So now this is again, Vyasa is concerned, I want to do that which will relieve the miseries of this age of Kali. But I'm not feeling that I've accomplished that. I'm feeling insufficiency for all of my endeavor. So here's the clue, the missing piece. By engaging, create that literature which will engage everyone in dedicating themselves to the transcendental service of the Personality of Godhead. What will accomplish that? Not mixed activity, karma kanda and jnana kanda, but directly devotional service. And what will awaken that direct devotional service? The glories of the Personality of Godhead. So, one of the questions asked by the sages in chapter 1 is, please explain that science of Godhead as taught by all the great acharyas. So now he's doing it. Narada himself is describing that science of Godhead. How one can come from the material condition to the spiritual condition. That's a science. And he's teaching it. So, let's break here. Any questions? Okay, so go on. To conclude the chapter, there are final four verses or so to help summarize it. Look at text 40 of chapter 5. Please, therefore, describe. Oh, we read this. The purpose of the Vedas being compiled, of Srimad Bhagavatam being compiled, is both for the perfected souls, because it's Uttama Shloka. It's the topmost poetry for the to the full satisfaction of the highest stages of spiritual attainment, but it's also for even ordinary people who are caught. Akama Sarvakamova Moksha Kama Udaradi. Please look at text 38. Thus, this is chapter 5. Thus, he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who has no material form. So, please pay attention to what he's saying. He is the seer of that which has no material form. Again, so this section is specifically glorifying what is transcendental sound vibration. Transcendental sound vibration is that which gives us access to see what you can't see by material vision, because it has no material form, it has no material substance, it's completely spiritual. But you have access to that which is fully spiritual by transcendental vibrations. And the previous verse, this is where we'll be finishing chapter 5, the previous verse is a very standard Vedic hymn type of verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi. The four, as Prabhupada calls them, aides-de-camp of Krishna are being glorified. But we've already heard in an earlier chapter that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. So these types of vibrations that are glorifying the names of the Personality of Godhead or his activity or form or qualities, these are the vibrations being referred to in 38, or the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam are those vibrations that allow one to be the actual seer. The seer of transcendence. Okay, so now we're creeping into chapter 6. And I'd like to start it with a question. So the question is, we're hearing Narada present his remembrance of activities that took place 4,300,000,000 years ago, plus a few number of years, for however long his life lasted. So how is this possible? Well, in his previous life, he was not realized.
He was killed by Krishna.
Yes.
He could remember his life.
Yeah. In these verses, it's specifically, there is a verse where Lord Vishnu appears to him. And at, just before parting, he lets him know that I'm going to give you the special power of recollection. The Lord Vishnu appears before Narada. So the beginning verses of this chapter, Vyasadeva wants to know, well, what did you do after all the sages left? I mean, imagine if you get to hear from your spiritual master about his previous life and a previous kalpa. So naturally, Prabhupada indicates in his purport, Vyasadeva is getting real excited. He wants to hear more and more about this. So he asks, what happened then? After the sages left? What did you do? How did you live? So after some questions, Narada gives the further information that he went and traveled here and there and experienced everything and had sat down in his trance for meditation. Then a series of verses that could have been included in your written homework assignment, where it describes his experience of the form of the Lord and his own personal experience of ecstatic love for that form of the Lord, bhava and prema. They're described directly. Then the vision broke. So that raises the question, for one who is such a elevated personality as Narada, that sees directly the form of the Lord by his concentrated attention and devotion, what does he do with the rest of his life after that experience? So sometimes I describe, just making some comparison of Srimad Bhagavatam to Nectar to Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita explains how one becomes perfect. Here also it describes that, but then what are the activities of such perfect souls? Where do you find literature like that? So Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us that kind of picture window into the activities of perfection, of persons who are perfect in this world, and also in Goloka and in Vaikuntha. How do they think? What do they act? What do they experience? So, if you can look at text 21 of chapter 6, O Narada, I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. So I have a question. Are we to understand that Narada, at this stage, having seen the form of the Lord, still had material taints, as the verses it seems to indicate? Is it possible to have direct experience of the form of the Lord, transcendental form of the Lord, for one who has still material taints? Mother Mahendrani?
Like if it's some kind of very, very subtle material taints, like it even says that the gopis, some of them couldn't go to the Rasa dance, even they already had lots of association with Krishna, but there's a certain group that couldn't go to the Rasa dance one night because they needed to get a little more purified so that Hankrita, they experience that great separation, the one night did the final trick. It seems like some kind of very elevated last stage that some of these people have.
Akila Darpalo?
Well, there's regular examples throughout the Bhagavatam.
Speak a little louder.
I'm sorry. There's regular examples throughout the Bhagavatam where they would perform sacrifices and Vishnu would come and speak to various assemblies, demigods who, many of which were on the platform, like even Daksha, who actually had his head cut off afterwards for his offense to Lord Shiva. Where Vishnu appeared, being pleased.
Okay.
Many examples.
So then, what can we conclude from that?
That he can appear if he desires.
So what's the criterion for his appearing?
His. Well, and also that he's being beckoned. Usually, generally, it's that he's being beckoned. Even with that lady who had the bundle removed from her shoulders, and then she prayed to Vishnu, oh please, can you come help me? And he just brings it back.
That's it.
It says in the next verse that he says, oh virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you'll be free from all material desires. That seems like he was, it was just, compassion, Vishnu.
Like Tim?
What about the verse that Krishna comes to these devotees and to annihilate non-devotees? Does that relate to this?
Mother Kamalini?
Krishna says, fools derive me like the seven machines of God. They do not know my transcendental nature, my supreme being of all space. So he often will appear, but I cannot see him properly unless one is devotional.
Well, Narada had some devotion, but he had a special favor of the personality of Godhead. The special favor of the personality of Godhead was to encourage him to go further, to encourage his further hankering. So this is an important, several important things here that Bhagavatam is imparting. That is, from the mercy that he got from the sages, he then got Krishna's mercy. And Krishna's mercy came in the form of increasing his hankering. The specific way that the Lord decided, like Akiladhara said, he was the criterion is, he willed it. He decided to make that appearance simply to increase the hankering of Narada. And then he blessed him. This is now just Narada's hearing a voice at this point. He blessed him that you will remember everything. That experience you will never forget, and I'm blessing you that. So he certainly did remember it for a whole night of Brahma. And then the next day and now, remembering. So that remembrance also comes. This is another philosophical point or continuation of the earlier verses of the Bhagavad, this chapter, that remembrance is also coming by the mercy of Krishna. So now I want to make a kind of general statement here. That is, this little section, 21 through 25, and we're closing in towards the end of time for the class and the end of the chapter also. This is a very nice example of the Lord being the direct instructor or trainer or teacher of Narada. So in the course of training, just like you could take in the case of Gurukul or here in this class or when somebody comes and takes part in our temple, there has to be training or teaching. In the course of teaching, there's some dialogue or communication between the student or the child or the member of the temple. And it's part of the relationship, or you can say the duty of the trainer, to bring the trainee closer to the goal. And that can be done by reviewing what they've already accomplished and then giving them some impetus to go further, some encouragement and some impetus to go further. Just like someone may go out on Sankirtan. So after the devotee comes back from Sankirtan, the Sankirtan leader or someone should be there to greet them and find out how they did. Just like you did some homework assignments, so you need to get the information back, how, you know, some comment, some indication of how satisfied the question. Not necessarily that it has to have some numerical grade on it, but some kind of indicator of how I'm situated presently, and some encouragement to some direction how to go further. So there are, just like Narada is giving instructions to Vyas by telling about his own experience, that he's, when it's all done, he's going to give Vyas some instruction and then take off. And it is up to Vyas to execute that instruction. You understand the point? That Srimad Bhagavatam is narrated in such a way that the personalities are teaching us how we should take the Bhagavatam's message. Just as Vyasadeva is compiling it, but he compiled it on the strength of some training and some instruction from Narada. So we should take it in the same way. So the overall question, stepping back one step further, is to say, how does the imparting of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam become successful? We were saying earlier, the earlier verses are indicating these are the qualifications of the speaker and these are the qualifications of the hearer. So we're all engaged in the process of both. I'm asking you questions, so you have to speak about the Bhagavatam, and you're also hearing about the... So we're engaged in that process. What's going to make it successful? What's the successful transmission of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? That this... I'm emphasizing the second category, that is, there's submission. There's eagerness to hear. We're all here. We've, you know, come long distances to come and hear. Then there has to be submission. That is, hearing and then putting into effect. what you've heard. Apply practically what these topics are. What are the conclusions of all of these transcendentally realized souls? What incorporated in your life? So one has to be very, very eager to do that. Just if I can complete the chapter, then question. Chapter, the next section of verses 26 through 30, Narada is explaining that after all of that experience, the Lord disappears, he no longer hears the voice, the unseen by eyes, personified by sound, supreme authority. That's 25. Stops speaking, he offers his obeisances. Then what does he do? What does the transcendentally surcharged personality do at that point? So verse 26. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. He understood it. He was interacting with other beings by chanting the glories of the Lord, knowing that it was benedictory, regardless of whether it fit in with the standard routine of what they were doing in their conditioned life. He was making it a benedictory effort to continue to chant those glories of the Lord, waiting for the final end of this or that body. And then the next verse is describing, at once like a flash of lightning and illumination occurring simultaneously, he gave up that body, he attained his spiritual body, he went within the body of Mahavishnu during the resting period of Brahma's night, and again he came out 4,300,000,000 years later as Narada along with the other sages at the time of Brahma's sub-creation. So then the last part of the chapter, he's describing his life now as Narada, traveling constantly, singing the transcendental messages, personally experiencing completely being free from care and anxiety due to material contact. So this is describing his personal experience of transcendental life. Very intimate. Have that revealed, this last section of the chapter. And then he departs. Okay, so, Subal?
Is Narada's body fully spiritual?
That's the indication. He says it directly in verse
28.
Having been awarded a transcendental body.
Srila Vyasadeva, so before compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't manifest love of God, the stage of love of God.
We'll hear that in chapter 7.
So that's why he was still responding.
It's we already discussed this also. It's pastime that he's performing. But yes, within that pastime, yes, he's not exhibiting that stage. Hearing Narada's instructions is sufficient to bring him to that stage. Any other question or comment? Yes, Mother Kamalini?
It's not exactly that case, but it's from the first day.
Sure, that's okay. Fine.
You said that they were having 1,000-year sacrifice.
Yeah.
For Kali Yuga had already entered the traditional life. Not that long.
Yeah. Prabhupada, you okay? You want to answer that?
Oh, answer it.
I thought you know.
What exactly is the question?
Sorry.
Kali Yuga had begun. The duration of life in Kali Yuga is 100 years. And they are planning a 1,000-year sacrifice. How's that? Many generations. Mahendra?
I should say, but it's maybe the lifespan gradually. Because it seems even in the Bible it is quite people who are quite human.
Well, these people are already elderly also. Generations of sacrifice. We don't, I've asked this question of several of our ISKCON scholars. What happened after Srimad Bhagavatam was narrated as far as the stages of Naimisharanya and their 1,000-year sacrifice? What happened next? I couldn't get any information. Yes?
This sacrifice is the narration of the Bhagavatam.
Well, it indicates that even before the Bhagavatam was narrated, when Sutta was began his speaking, they were engaged in other ritualistic types of sacrifice meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Well, that was the whatever you call the premier part of the sacrifice. Profitable?
There's a little thought that came to me when you were speaking about who is the Srimad Bhagavatam meant for.
Yeah.
And how it, you know, the learned and the ignorant both benefit, and the speaker and the hearer also benefit. And I remember you brought to mind how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta told Srila Prabhupada to translate it into English. It'll be good for you,
yeah.
It'll be good for them. So it's the same,
yep.
The same message even the, you know, here now.
Sure. Keila
Darkabu? That point that you made about in terms of a person making it practical, in terms, Murali Radhika was talking about that, about how we sometimes send our men out without actually, with them not being in the Madhyama stage, and then they...
I know. Yeah, we discussed before he gave his class.
Yes, that I found that very directly important, that we can apply this, to have it as a focus.
And to take it one step further, that is to say, a Madhyama is one who will assimilate. So, something from this side? Someone had their hand up? Oh, Arjun Prabhu?
Do we have any idea what does the Madhikarya and the Radha mean to the body of the Vishnu for 1,300 of us?
What?
Since he had attained already his spiritual form, what was his... What happened during that 4,300,000,000 years to Narada Muni? I have no information.
Should be about the same as he's doing now.
Same thing happened to Brahma.
Brahma was also
within the body of Mahavishnu.
Not during that time, it's not.
Maybe they had a conversation, I don't know.
Not during that time, because that was just one night of Brahma. He was only sleeping during that time, correct?
Yeah.
So at that time, Brahma was still...
Resting.
Yeah, but not in the body of Vishnu.
You're
it's only the...
asking or saying?
I think I'm saying, because that was only... that was only... For Brahma, that time was only his evening. So presumably, he just went home to... and got in his bed, and that was it.
Wow.
1629.
Read it.
At the end of the millennium.
At the end of the millennium, when the personality of God is Lord Narayan laid down into the water of the devastation, Brahma began to enter into him along with all created elements, and I also entered through his breathing.
So that was his bed.
I assume that within his 24 hours it was more or less conventional.
Anything further? Radhika Ramana Prabhu?
There was a question before that appeared about the Narada, because he's not, he may not be a qualified to appear in front of Krishna, because he may not be a completely like pure in that sense. And if it's possible that anybody can appear in front of Krishna, or Krishna will have different...
Well, certainly impossible for Krishna to appear in front of anybody.
That's what I mean, because ultimately, like, I mean, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is
But we generally, the reason I raise the question is, we generally think in this way, at least I'm accustomed to think in this way, that Krishna appears before his pure devotee. What's Krishna's interest to appear before someone other than his pure devotee? I mean, we're so many of us who are devotees, we're walking around and who's seeing Krishna? As it's described that Narada saw Krishna. So we're anticipating that day when we'll become sufficiently pure that we will also see Krishna. But even when Krishna comes for that level of pure devotee, it's still of his own sweet will. That same sweet will can be exercised by Krishna for a personality like Narada. He has special mercy. Why did Narada get that special mercy? He had the association of the sages, and they gave him his mercy. They gave Narada their mercy. And because of being favored by them,
so
you understand the reason for the question.
We should.
The conclusion is we should look for such mercy of the Vaishnavas. That's the Bhagavatam's message.
Again and again, the message of...